Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal, Ozil. Marca Mesut Ozil.
Bad boys, what you gonna do when they come for you? Alexandre Lacazette.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunner Blog. James.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Shall we do hello?
Just hello.
Just hello, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, we're recording this not too long after the game. It's now 6 o'clock in the evening. The game finished, what, around 4?
4 o'clock, yeah.
4 o'clock. So we haven't had an awful lot of time to get our thoughts together or really rewatch any of it. So a lot of this is going to be gut feeling stuff tonight. And here's where I think we should go with this. I think we should start by talking about the good things in the Arsenal performance. Now that we've got that out of the way, let's talk about the rest.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot to say that was good. I actually was doing player ratings today for ESPN, and within the player ratings, they have a separate section where they ask you to write the positives and negatives.
Yes, I've been that soldier.
You've been that soldier. And let me tell you, today, the positives was, you know, a real struggle.
I'm curious, actually, as to what you wrote. I mean, the only real positive I could make of that was, A, we didn't concede more goals.
Yeah.
B, that in part that was due to Socrates making some excellent last-ditch blocks, and Leno made a couple of saves, which were, I think, pretty easy for him, really. You know, there was no magic save, but beyond that, I would struggle to find any positives. Watford have just scored, by the way, if you're interested.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah. 3-2.
3-2.
I think I did mention Leno because I thought that, you know, the volume of his saves was pretty decent. Mm. And I think the one from Bernard where Maitland-Niles
slip
a clear one-on-one. I remember, was it Tim from 7am Kickoff was talking about how many big chances Leno has saved this season.
Mm.
And that had to go down as a big one. I mean, yeah, the fact that it was just 1-0, I suppose, is the major positive, because this is a race in which goal difference might play a part. I mean, it is so close that one defeat feels really big. And I guess the reason it does feel really big is because this is the start of a run which includes plenty of away games, some of which look very tricky. And yeah, we've not exactly covered ourselves in glory in the first outing.
No, we haven't. It's actually worrying how bad we were today away from home at the start of a run of games in which, you know, five of our last seven games, well, now four of our last six games are going to be away from home. And today I felt like, you know, we went into this game in reasonable form. You know, we come back off the interval, put in a controlled, polished performance against Newcastle. And I thought, okay, today is the day to sort of not necessarily lay down a marker, but just show that, okay, as a team, we're better than the away form suggests. You know, we can translate what we do at the Emirates to Goodison Park or wherever the hell it is that we're playing, because there's no real reason why these players who can beat Manchester United, who can beat Tottenham, you know, who can beat Chelsea, should have such difficulty going to teams like Everton and Brighton and Southampton and Bournemouth. You know, and I'm not saying this out of arrogance, or I'm not trying to belittle those clubs in any way. I'm just saying that if you can perform that way against those big teams, there's something really missing. There's something really wrong when you can't do it away from home against teams who just simply aren't as good.
Well, as well, does it not sort of sum up the Jekyll and Hyde nature of this team, that we're coming off the back of one of our most controlled performances of the season, in which you thought, look, this team looks so in tune with what the manager wants from them. They look so confident. You know, we'd beaten United, we'd beaten Rennes. We completely dominated against Newcastle.
Yeah.
And then we produced what we did at Goodison Park. And I think that, to me, you know, that does say that this is about home and away. And I know it's all, it's so, it makes you want to tear, well, it makes me want to tear what remaining hair I have left out.
Because, don't do it. You need it. You
know? Yeah, I know. I mean, hold on to what I've got. But it shouldn't make the enormous difference that it does make for us, should it? I mean, like, you know, the contrast between our home and away form is so dramatic. It's kind of, I don't think there's an equivalent, you know, anywhere in the four divisions, really. There's a team who's quite so good at home and quite so inconsistent away.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't kept a clean sheet away from home this season.
No.
I might come back to this, see if we can, while we're talking, think of any theories as to, you know, I do have a bit of a theory as to why our away form is so at odds with our home form. But we'll come to that a bit later on. And let's sort of go into the nuts and bolts of today. Mm-hmm. The team selection. I sort of have some sympathy in terms of the team he was forced to pick, in a way, because Aaron Ramsey, you know, he came off the other night with what was said to be cramp, then turned out to be a groin problem, and was clearly not considered fit enough to do 90 minutes. It was a, you know, they'd obviously got the information to say that if you play him for 90 minutes, you're going to put him at significant risk of that. That's just my guess as to why he chose Elneny. Because otherwise,
I think that's extremely likely.
Yeah.
I think that's extremely likely because he doesn't go out of his way to pick Elneny, does he?
No, that's very true. I mean, that was what, his second start in the league this season. So, you know, he's a player who he doesn't really care for. He took him off at halftime today. He deems him absolutely expendable. So the only reason I can think of that he started was because we were trying not to do too much or take too much of a risk with Ramsey. The back three, back five, whatever you want to call it, has been absolutely fine in terms of the way we've played in recent weeks. You know, we'd sort of put the negative connotations of that formation aside. You know, no issues there. Did you have perhaps a slight issue with Aubameyang being on the bench?
I have to say, I didn't. And I thought, you know, the fact that Ozil again played as the sort of right side in the front three, it made me think, well, you know, did we do that against Newcastle in part as preparation for some of these away games? It's something that, you know, we want to do, have one up front and two off him.
Yeah.
And Ozil and Mkhitaryan were those guys today. I looked at that lineup and I think it's worth reiterating. We were without Koscielny, we were without Xhaka, we were without Torreira. And I don't really know what he could have done differently. I mean, yes, he could have put Aubameyang in for Lacazette, but I don't think you can take a risk with Ramsey. If he's a kind of at risk of suffering an injury that puts him out for the remainder of the season, I just don't think you can do that.
No, I agree. And I think the only other potential solution within the squad was to play... I mean, you could perhaps have played Lichtsteiner at right wing back and or Jenkinson and move Maitland-Niles into a central midfield role, but I think that's stretching it. I think possibly you could have dropped, taken Elneny out and put Iwobi into central midfield, but I think that would have raised as many eyebrows as the selection that he did make. It seemed, you know, it was basically all he had left in terms of midfielders, with Ramsey, you know, nursing an injury, Xhaka out and Torreira suspended. That's the extent of our central midfield options. And, you know, the way they played today, both of them would suggest that we need to add some depth there. And when you consider Ramsey is leaving, you know, there's a big job of work to do in the summer when it comes to addressing our central midfield. But that's, you know, that's for another day.
What about you? Did you have a concern about Lacazette versus Aubameyang?
No, I don't think it would have been Lacazette versus Aubameyang. I think I could have played Aubameyang and Lacazette. I think that's what I would have done, rather than play Mkhitaryan. And I can see why he chose Mkhitaryan. You know, that the ostensibly a guy who will... what will he do? What will Mkhitaryan do? Sometimes he'll do some good things, but most of the time, actually, now that I think about it, he's kind of a lightweight performer. But what he has, I suppose, is a physicality when you go into an away game. I don't mean that he's strong. I mean that he's got stamina. And I think that's why... That's probably why he picked him.
Well, I think he's been productive as well in the last few
weeks. He has in the last few weeks. And I'm not, yeah, absolutely. I'm not saying that he hasn't been productive in the last few weeks. I just think that if you take his Arsenal career as a whole, it's been pretty underwhelming for the most part. For me, anyway, other people might disagree, and that's absolutely fine. But for me, he's sort of an underwhelming. But I can see why he picked him. But... I just wonder if it was a return to the kind of cautiousness in Emery that has in many ways been a factor in some of our performances this season. When we've struggled, it's when he's erred on the side of caution for the most part, you know? And today felt, you might call it sensible, but maybe it was just a bit too cautious.
I don't agree with that. Okay. I don't think it was too cautious. I think, you know, he started Mesut Ozil, that he's taken flak for not doing away from home all season. He started Mkhitaryan. He had Lacazette there. He's got those wing-backs with that really high starting position. I mean, I think the last thing you could have accused Maitland-Niles and Kolasinac of in that first half is caution. They were so high up the pitch, and Kolasinac particularly was repeatedly exposed. Mm. So this is my thing. I people will look to the coach and say he got the lineup wrong, he got the approach wrong, but as far as I can see, he set that team out to basically do exactly what they did against Newcastle.
Yeah, that's fair.
And that's why when I look at it and I'm like, well, what goes wrong, I'm like, well, there must be a psychological component here. And I realize that sort of feels like a bit of a gray area answer, but it's the only thing I can think of that makes any sense. They just don't seem... I mean, to be honest, they looked like they were on their heels and throughout the whole
from
first
the start.
Half.
Yeah, I mean, it was another one of those first halves, wasn't it, where we play really poorly, and we've seen a lot of those under Emery this season. It's a bad first half. We're too passive. We're not competing. We're not you know, I know we can talk about the intangibles and how difficult they are to measure, but you can see with your own eyes when a team is up for it, and you can see when they're playing on the front foot. And you can see when they're, even when they're playing poorly, when a team is trying to do something specific with, you know, with the way that they press or the way that they're organized. And that was all missing. You know, it was, I don't know if I wrote this on the live blog, but I was certainly thinking it. It was like going through the motions football for Arsenal. They were just going through the motions in that first half. It was football by numbers. There was nothing interesting or exciting or... what's another word I could use here? It just felt like they were, we'll play 45 minutes and, you know, if it doesn't work, we've got another 45 minutes to turn it around. They didn't seem as driven or as up for this game as I thought that they would be, particularly when you've got to address that away record. And I think, you know, going back to your point about the team selection and all that kind of stuff, I take that point. Absolutely. What I don't think a coach can necessarily legislate for is so many players being bad on the day.
Yeah. So I agree with you on that front. And I mean, I mentioned the player ratings. I mean, it was very difficult to give anyone above a five today for Arsenal. You know, we were in that territory and players were poor, but I do think that focus was an issue in the game. I almost wonder if, because, you know, we actually started in the first couple of minutes quite well, and we had that move where Lacazette probably ought to have had a penalty, you know, when he had that shot and the guy takes him out. Was it Zouma? I forget exactly who brought him down. And I don't know, it almost felt like after that we seemed to go into our shell, like we were feeling sorry for ourselves for not getting the decision. And Guendouzi putting a bit of a wild challenge on Luca Dean.
What was the referee talking to him about before that? Because a couple of minutes before, he had a word
about
with...
the penalty. I presume he had been protesting about the penalty.
Okay. Right.
And he was like, listen, keep it quiet.
Shut
and
your
then,
mouth.
Yeah, and then, I mean, I guess there was frustration in that challenge, but... I mean, you know, it was a really silly booking in the first 5 minutes and actually probably had some part in the fact that he didn't leave a big imprint on the game from that point.
Yeah, absolutely. He had to play conservatively. He couldn't make a challenge. The midfield was weak enough as it is already with Elneny and Guendouzi. That is not a partnership any of us really want to see on a regular basis, if ever again. I'm quite sure that I don't. But yeah, it was a silly booking to pick up. And, you know, you can say he managed it well, in that he didn't, you know, come across the referee's radar again, but he had to play within himself then. And we were already lacking something in midfield, and that just contributed to the fact that we couldn't make or couldn't take any control in a key area of the pitch. Even late on, I think I put something in the live blog, I can't even remember who was on the ball, but it was around the 71st minute of the game. I put it in the live blog so I can remember. Let me see here. Oh, maybe I didn't put it in. I thought it was around the 71st minute. Yeah, 71 minutes and six. And I remember looking at an Arsenal player with the ball. And in the center of the park, there wasn't an Arsenal player anywhere. There was nobody anywhere. Mm. Nobody for him to pass to. And we saw that throughout the game. Ramsey was looking for people to pass to. When we had throw-ins, people were standing still. All that kind of stuff where, you know, there just wasn't the requisite effort, physical effort, to make life difficult for Everton. And on top of that, players were bad. Mkhitaryan was bad. Ozil was, you know, Ozil away from home. Maitland-Niles was bad. Kolasinac was bad. Mkhitaryan, bad. There's the sawing going on next door to you. That's bad. Yeah. You know, you know, there were a lot of, as you say, 4 and 5 out of 10 performances from far too many players. But so,
and Everton, I think, adopted a relatively physical approach. I mean, Dominic Calvert-Lewin is not the world's greatest centre forward or anything like it, but he scrapped for everything today. And, you know, Arsenal just weren't winning enough of those first and second balls. And, you know, Richarlison should have done a lot more than he did, given the space that he got time and time again on that right flank. I mean, I've never seen a player get in behind quite so easily before. Yeah. It was really alarming. Bernard as well, a couple of times. They just absolutely took us apart.
Mm.
And physically, we weren't there. We weren't at the right level. We weren't switched on enough. And it's really disappointing because the stakes are high at this point in the season. You know, I don't know if going to third in the table last week allowed some of these players to get ahead of themselves here or think that they'd made it into the Champions League, because on today's evidence, you know, they're a long, long way from doing that.
Yeah. So what about the goal? Let's talk about the goal. I've seen people on Twitter talking about how it should have been disallowed because the guy, he put his foot over the line when he was taking the throw, and by the letter of the law, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I can't get hung up on that.
Well, if our defenders had spotted that and consequently stopped defending, and that was the explanation for why they were all just stood around, then I would maybe buy it. But they don't know that's happened.
Yeah.
They're playing on. And frankly, I thought the defending was really weak on that set piece. I mean, it's so clear what they're going to do. They're going to go long. We know that. We know he's got that in his armoury. And we're all just stood absolutely flat on our heels.
Mm. Yep.
I found it maddening. And I also found it kind of shocking. It's just a visual thing, but how quickly Arsenal arms went up. It almost felt like they appealed rather than defended. It was bizarre.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think you just touched on something very interesting there in that you said maybe these players, having gone into third, got a bit ahead of themselves. And I think sometimes we have good reason to feel a little bit hard done by refereeing decisions or whatever. But I think that's true of you know, lots of teams. But I get the sense from some of these Arsenal players that they constantly look for an excuse or an out, you know? when they perform badly or when they don't do their jobs properly, they're always in the face of the referee as if it's somehow his fault. I mean, the referee had nothing to do with that goal. It was shit defending. It wasn't aggressive enough. You know, Monreal picked up a booking for dissent. Guendouzi got a talking to within, what, 3 or 4 minutes of the game for back chat, all that kind of stuff. I think there's something there. And I think it ties into why I think we have a problem away from home as opposed to at home. And I think
we'll go on. What do you mean?
The only thing that I can think of is that it is the character of these players. They're comfortable at home. They feel comfortable. It's nice. Everything is nice. They get looked after. They're comfortable at the training ground. It's beautiful. It's lovely. Everything is wonderful for them.
Mm.
But the minute things get a little bit testy, we don't have the character to rise above it. It can only be mental weakness with too many of these players. It's ingrained in them. Because, you know, if you can produce the results that we produce at home, there's no reason why you should have this kind of dichotomy when you're on the road. It's not about their talent. It's not about their skill or their ability. It can only be one of those intangibles, their character, how much they can put adversity or difficult situations behind them and get on with their fucking jobs. It feels like they're too keen to have a moan and have a groan and shout at the referee and complain about this, that, and the other. And the reality is, when you look at today's performance, not enough of them did their jobs. And when it started going wrong, it stayed going wrong, apart from like a 10-minute period at the start of the second half when Ramsey came on and almost single-handedly lifted the team and drove the team forward. But that was just one guy.
Yeah, and I found that so alarming, because as soon as he came on, any fan watching that could feel what he was doing that the rest of the team weren't.
Exactly.
Actually, to be fair, I would probably say the same for Alex Iwobi when he came on as well. There was a intensity to their game that just was not there from the start, from the rest of this side.
Yeah.
And it literally pulled it into contrast, pulled it into view when Ramsey came on, because straight away we had a midfield and we had a player out there playing at something like the right level. And look, you know, he actually, I thought, faded. The second half went on, probably didn't sustain that impact, but you did see it then. And I watched that and I thought, the scary thing about this is he's the one who's leaving.
Yeah, absolutely. And when one guy can come on and show everybody up in that way, like, it was impossible that he was going to be able to maintain that for 45 minutes, because what he needed was other players to step up and to do the same as he did. And nobody did. Nobody did. I think you're right. Iwobi, when he came on, tried. But apart from that, it was just like, oh, this is what's happening. You know, they meekly accepted another away performance like that without trying to address it. You know, everyone was looking for somebody else to be the guy to do it. And Ramsey came on and tried and couldn't do it, you know, enough. But as a collective, it's an absolute failure. And I wonder about, you know, who's on that pitch that should be leading these guys. You know, we talk about...
I mean, and we can't stress enough, I don't think, what a huge miss Laurent Koscielny is. But again, that feeling kind of instills a little bit of the same fear that I have about Ramsey. You know, that this guy, whether he's here next season or not, he's not going to be here for too much longer, and he's not someone you can rely on to play every single game. And yet, we are utterly dependent on him to hold the defence together, and I think, to a certain extent, hold the team together.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could see that we missed Xhaka as well today in midfield.
That's true. And he's a player who comes in for a lot of criticism. And I think people always are kind of looking for the first opportunity to dispense with him. But what I would say is he's never been out of the team for a spell and stayed out of that team. He almost always comes back in. You know, managers essentially want him in there because of what he brings. And yeah, we miss Xhaka, we miss Torreira, but I maintain, and I said this before the game, and I said before the game, I think this team, this 11 that we've put out is good enough to win this match. And, you know, halfway through people are saying, oh, I bet you feel stupid saying that now. I don't feel stupid saying that at all. I still insist that 11 players that we put out and the substitutes that were involved should be good enough to beat Everton. They won't always, but they should be able to. And yet they did not perform at anything like their potential today. Close to it.
Sure. No, I agree. I agree with that. But what I would come back to is the inability to produce and to perform away from home is down to these players, I think. You know, people can talk about Emery and his team selection and all that kind of stuff. I just think that too many of these players are fundamentally weak character-wise that you can't expect them to go away from home and play Everton and be able to beat them, because there's too much evidence to suggest that they can't. You know, I if you were to play that game at home, I would feel confident that that 11, weak and all as it was, would be good enough to beat Everton.
Yeah,
Go on.
No, I was just going to say, I think, you know, people think that the kind of home away thing is intangibles, and you hear people saying, well, the pitch is the same size, the players are the same, I don't understand the problem. But it is psychologically a different test. It's a very different prospect performing in front of 60,000 people who are cheering everything you do, who are booing every action against you, who are constantly berating the referee for not giving things your way, than it is to go to somewhere else and be on the opposing end of that. Yeah. I think it is absolutely a different thing. It's like if you're in any job, if I say you've got to go and give a presentation to your office, or you've got to go and walk into the office of your nearest competitors and give it. And some people would say, I'll relish that opportunity and I will, you know, rise to it and show them what I can do. But other people would crumble. And unfortunately, Arsenal just seem to have too many crumblers.
Too many crumblers. What a brilliant way of putting it. And you're right. We do have too many people who just can't do it away from home. And I think we have to seriously address that, because tactically, positionally, all that kind of stuff that Emery can do, you know, he's gone through the whole gamut of it this season, hasn't he? In terms of what he's done away from home, you know, 4-4-2, 4-2-3-1, you know, 3 at the back, 3-5-2, whatever formation you want to, you know, we still haven't got on top of this. And the importance of today's game, I think, was an issue as well.
That's interesting. Do you think we felt the pressure a bit?
Yeah. Yeah, why not? Why not? On top, you know, they're going into this game unsure of themselves away from home, or willing to be taken down that rabbit hole of a shit away performance, because it's just what we do. It's what we do now. It's who we are, and it's what we do. And when you add a bit of pressure on top of that, then I don't know. You know, I don't know what he can do to fix it, but unless he does, and he's, you know, he's got like, what, 3 weeks, basically, to get it right, then this season, all of a sudden, starts to become more European-focused.
Well, I mean, I hate to break it to you, but we can't win the Europa League without two away games and one on neutral territory.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can't do it all at the Emirates Stadium. And, I think this game as well, you know, I accept we didn't get the luck of the officiating. You know, we probably should have had a penalty. Yes, within the letter of the law, their goal shouldn't have stood. But I think I would have a lot more time for that argument if I felt that we had in any way performed. But we just didn't. And actually, a 1-0 scoreline was not really a fair reflection of the game.
Yeah.
They ought to have put us to the sword, really, particularly in that second half. I think they could have really run away with things. Yeah. The fact that we got into the last 10 minutes with a chance of scraping something back, I couldn't believe it. I could not believe our luck that we were in with a chance of scraping a point in this. I was like, this is a gift from the gods. Maybe we're going to take it. Maybe it's our day. Maybe we're going to escape with a very, very lucky point. And to be honest, it never at any point felt like we were going to do that. I heard Unai Emery say after the game, we had three good chances. And I'm really, really struggling, aside from the Aaron Ramsey volley that went over the bar, to think of any.
I think the only one that springs to mind is Mkhitaryan curling one just wide. I'm not sure you'd necessarily say that was a good chance. Mm. It was a nice bit of play from Mkhitaryan. It was basically the only good thing he did all day. You know, when he cut inside and curled a shot beyond the far post. But, you know, Aubameyang came on and we didn't play to any of his strengths. I know it's a little bit difficult when Everton are sitting and, you know, they don't have to come out and leave space for him to exploit. But even the way we started the second half, and I looked at the team when they were lined up and I thought, hang on a minute here. Why are we playing Mkhitaryan on the left-hand side when he's always been much more effective for us on the right? And why are we playing Aubameyang on the right-hand side when he rarely... I know he came on the other night and did a decent job, you know, playing there more or less, but generally speaking, when he scored for us, when he's been played in a wide position, it's been out on the left-hand side. So we have two players, you know, one of whom's out of position anyway. Aubameyang is a striker and he's being played out of position anyway. But Mkhitaryan is a guy who normally plays from the right-hand side. And I thought that was a bit strange. I was wondering, I don't know what the logic was there.
No, I'm not entirely sure either. And actually, you know, I think Emery is a little bit culpable in that respect. I thought if you're going to bring Aubameyang on, I think you've got to do that thing where you go to the split strikers and the number 10 behind. Instead, we were just kind of shoehorning him into the wide areas. And I think if you were going to do that, you might as well have brought Iwobi on. I think he probably would have had more impact in those positions, because he's generally better on the ball in the approach play. I can understand wanting to get Aubameyang on, but I think if you are, get him up front alongside Lacazette properly in a two, where we've seen them be effective. That was a frustrating one. I was slightly surprised as well, I shouldn't be, that Elneny came off. I just thought Guendouzi being on a booking might be, you know, enough to make him be the full guy. I wasn't surprised to see Kolasinac come off, because I was really disappointed at his performance today after a good run of form.
Yeah, and I think he passed with 52% accuracy, so he was sort of at his
back
worst.
Back
to his worst today. But, you know, that was true of too many of our players.
I think Sokratis and Mustafi actually did okay. You know, I think they bailed us out a couple of times. Sokratis made a couple of very good blocks.
Blocked four shots.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, we don't give Mustafi a lot of praise on the show, but no, I thought he had a couple of decent moments.
I thought Mustafi generally was fine. You know, he did pretty okay, apart from a couple of... there was a really bad pass late in the game when we were in injury time and we just needed to keep possession and put the ball up the other end of the pitch, and he gave it away and we ended up with Everton having a corner. And then there was that foul near the halfway line late in the game, and I'm thinking, what? I don't know what he's thinking in terms of the way he defends. So there are those moments that sparked a bit of a hoo-ha on the sidelines. I think Emery and Marco Silva had a few words afterwards, and Emery was saying, look, yeah, sorry, it was all a bit. But you see Mesut Ozil throwing his jacket. I mean, what was he throwing his jacket at? What was that? Who was he throwing his jacket at? And why?
I mean, it looked like Emery, didn't it? But it was strange. I think he was just trying to sort of throw a sheet over Marco Silva. Bizarre. But that was kind of our performance summed up, wasn't it? You know, throwing our jackets in the air instead of actually doing anything. And we mentioned Sokratis there. What did you make of the incident in the first half? I know we've sort of analysed this game in quite a circuitous manner, but the where he picked up the fateful booking, of course.
Yeah, I wish he hadn't picked up that booking, because we're going to miss him. And I think, you know, he is...
I mean, did he have an option there?
Maybe. I'd have to watch it again. Can I watch it again?
Yeah, watch it again. I mean, what I'll say while you find it is, I was disappointed, but there's a part of me that kind of thinks with Socratis, you take the rough with the smooth. You know he's going to get booked a lot of the time, and you know Martin Keown was regularly booked as well when he played, and it was just part of his game. And he is sort of the kind of defender who I think accepts he's going to get yellow cards and is happy to walk that line. So it's quite difficult to have too many recriminations. You're almost asking him to be somebody else, aren't you?
Not be himself. Okay, here it is. I'm just going to have a look at it here now. One second.
Changing the angle cleverly. Bernard with an excellent block, and it could be
he didn't fancy the race. And,
because there was a break on, Socratis wasn't.
I mean, Mustafi was there, but then I guess if you played alongside Mustafi.
he's just thinking, I can't let this be his responsibility.
Who knows? I mean, for all he knew, Mustafi could be about to step up and play offside or something. So, yeah.
Well, what he's done is he's given Mustafi a place in the starting 11 guaranteed for the next two games.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, look, we have Koscielny hopefully to come back in alongside, into that back three, I should say.
Still a doubt for Thursday.
Still a doubt. Really? Okay. Yeah. So what? Wow. What the fuck do we do?
But of course, Socratis can play Thursday. That's not.
Oh, yes, of course. Of course.
An issue.
Okay. Well, that's fine. But, you know, in Premier League terms, it's not ideal because I think, you know, when we're going to. Who have we got?
Is it Watford and Palace, I think?
Watford and Palace. So Palace is at home. You know, I would like Socratis in the team to face Troy Deeney and his, you know, gigantic cojones and all that.
I guess, is it good news in a way? Watford have just qualified for the FA Cup final. Maybe their focus won't be quite so much on the Premier League. The other side of that coin is they'll be absolutely flying after coming from 2-0 down to win that game.
Yeah, maybe so. But maybe you're right. You know, it can be a thing where players aren't quite as committed because they don't want to get an injury to miss an FA Cup final. Mm-hmm. And maybe the other side of that as well is Wolves could be a bit disheartened. Having lost that game from 2-0 down, it could be a confidence blow to Wolves. So, fingers crossed. I mean, I realise I'm absolutely and utterly clutching at straws here. to try and anything
we're all doing
that,
it. Don't worry.
Anything that might make our away form or our away chances even better or slightly better, I should say. I think maybe Socratis could have let that go, but like you say, it's not the kind of guy that he is. That's not what he does. He's always going to make that kind of a foul. I think he tried to disguise it, didn't he? But it didn't work.
Yeah, he always does. I mean, what I would say is as well, you've got to accept those bookings. They're not all needless, stupid bookings. Some of those bookings that he's picked up probably prevented goals. You know, he can be quite smart with his bookings, or at least prevented good chances. So you have to accept the cost of that. And unfortunately, it has cost us.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm just looking now at the match stats for the game. We had 57% possession, but mustered just 7 shots. Everton 43%, 23 shots.
23 shots?
Yeah.
We let them have 20. I mean, it doesn't feel wrong by any means, but that's a lot.
It is a lot.
That's a lot, isn't it? Jesus Christ.
The vast majority were off target, only 6 on target. But those 6 on target were from very good positions. And, yeah, they took us apart way too easily. And we are a team who we know we have defensive weaknesses. We know we're liable to concede stupid goals. When we've been at our best is when we've found our forward play, you know, clicking into gear. And it never did that today. And if you think, you know, back to the Spurs game, which I suppose was our last Premier League away game, was it? And which felt like a bit of a turning point. Sadly, we just weren't anywhere close to that.
No, not at all.
You know, what you don't want is for that to feel not like a turning point, but by like an outlier, an anomaly.
Yeah, I have a big worry now after this game because I feel like they know that there's a problem. They know there's a problem away from home. The players, I was going to say they aren't stupid, but I think some of them might be. But
that contributes as well, doesn't it? If we're talking about this sort of psychological element, when you go out there knowing, right, we're not very good at this, that, you know, that must play its part as well.
I think it does, and this only adds to that as well. It's like instead of instead of making it slightly better and building the confidence slowly and making ourselves, you know, feel more secure away from home, we've only just added to those doubts. You know, we've got
to walk. It's becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it?
You know, exactly.
We win at home and that builds momentum. We lose away and that builds momentum. And a very worrying momentum. I mean, you and I both predicted in our predictions that we would win this fixture.
What the fuck was I thinking? What was I thinking?
We were pissed out of our minds when we did that. I don't know what we were thinking.
I was high on the cannabis.
It was about 2 p.m. on a Thursday. We were all over the place. But I mean, what I would say is there are going to be twists and turns. And I think, you know, there's real despondency out there about this result, and mm-hmm. I do understand why, but we are fourth and we've all played the same amount of games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is still within our control.
It's in our ridiculously greasy, slippy, flappy hands. Is that what you're saying?
For now.
I agree with you that there are going to be twists and turns in this chase for a top four place. I just worry that we're going to be the ones that are doing all the twisting and turning,
sure,
or most of
gonna
it.
Be
we're going to be
landing on more snakes than ladders.
Exactly. We'd be twisting like, who was the twisty guy? Chubby Checker?
Yeah. I think so. I mean, yeah, it doesn't feel great. Because actually, you know, when you look at our remaining fixtures, the away trips are against teams who sort of are a bit like Everton, you know, where you sort of never quite know what you're going to get. You feel like they can get the occasional big scalp. And when you look at the teams they might get the scalp of, it's like kind of prime suspect number one. I mean, Leicester, Watford, Wolves. They all come into that category of games we make look harder than they ought to be.
Yeah. Well, look, I think fair play to you for trying to find a positive, little bit of a silver lining to today, because I really can't. I don't think anybody, apart from maybe Socrates and Leno and Ramsey, you know, Iwobi, nobody really comes out of that game with any credit. And I wouldn't mind slapping some of them with a wet fish.
Yeah, it was a horrible way to spend 9 minutes of my life. There's no doubt about that. It was in no way entertaining. It wasn't even sort of one of those games where it's like,
so bad, you know, it's good. No, it wasn't
funny. It was just sort of painful and boring. Really boring, actually. Really, really boring.
Yes, I agree. Okay, anything else we should touch on from the game? Any incidents or moments or any more of that shit that we need to like go through again? Or
I think we've shoveled through enough of it. We're going to have to shovel through more in the questions. So let's save what we can till then.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arseblog. On the Arseblog Facebook page, when I don't forget to post it there, which I did tonight, so apologies to everybody who uses the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thearseblog. And also on the Arseblog Discord server, which you can get access to if you're an Arseblog member on Patreon, which is patreon.com Patreon.com/arsblog. It costs a fiver a month you sign up. You get lots of extra stuff, including a chat server in which you can leave questions for the Arscast Extra. This isn't a question, but I like to read this one out from Mr. Underscore Idiot, who's at Mr. Underscore Idiot Underscore Wind on Twitter. And he says, was Ozil's reaction on the bench a tribute to his favorite album, No Jacket Required by Phil Collins? And if so, should he receive a ban? Absolutely he should. If it was a tribute to that album, not only should he be banned, he should be sold forthwith after being flogged. Actually, we should do what they did to Ned Stark in season one of Game of Thrones. That's what I reckon.
Yeah.
It's harsh.
It's harsh, but you've got to draw the line somewhere.
Exactly.
And who knew that Mesut Ozil liking Phil Collins would ultimately be the straw that broke that poor camel's back. Let's have this question from 7 a.m. kickoff. Mentioned him in part one. And Tim asks, are Arsenal overperforming at home or underperforming away?
Underperforming away. That's right. Yeah, I think so. I think they're underperforming away. Like, for the last two seasons, we've been really good at home.
We've sort of been consistent enough at home that it's kind of difficult to argue that that's kind of a fluke.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. That's my point. Whereas we have been, I mean, we've been better this season away from home than we were last season. But, you know, the bar was set so low last year that it wouldn't be difficult for some minor improvement just to happen as a matter of course, you know? Mm. But it's definitely an underperformance away from home rather than overperforming at home. For me, anyway.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. But I think Arsenal are underperforming away, but I think there is something bigger than that happening, which is, you know, when like a team becomes a cup team, where they're sort of not very good in the leagues, but they're good in the cups, it's kind of difficult to decipher why.
Yeah.
I think Arsenal have become a home team. They have become a team who are excellent at home and bad away. And I think it is sort of endemic now. I think it is sort of in our culture. And you know, that's not a new thing. It's happened to other teams in the past. Unfortunately for us, most of those teams sort of tend to be in mid-table.
Yeah. Do you remember that famous story where, I can't remember the exact context of it, but it was Manchester United. And I think Sir Alex Ferguson's team talk was, lads, it's Spurs. Could have been that game where they were like 2-0 down or something and they ended up coming back to win 5-2 or something. But whatever. The point was, lads, it's Spurs. You know, this is Spurs. This is kind of who they are. And I'm not necessarily drawing a comparison between us and them, but if you were a team facing Arsenal at home, you'd fancy it, wouldn't you? You'd go, lads, it's Arsenal. You know, it's not like, oh, shit, it's Arsenal, fuck. You know, if you go to the Emirates, you're like, okay, this is going to be difficult. But the evidence, the mountain of evidence is there to suggest that if you're a team in the Premier League and Arsenal come to visit, chances are you've got a reasonable hope of getting something from the game, whether it's a draw or 3 points. Lads, it's Arsenal. Like, what do you think Watford are going to be saying ahead of next Monday? Come on, lads.
Probably something about cojones, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I get it, but it'll be like, come on. You know, they'll be straight into us in the first 10, 15, 20 minutes of that game. They'll be, like, super on us. They'll be physical. And unless we do something like score early, you know, they'll fancy their chances of making life really difficult for us and for us to, you know, be the little footballing fucking tortoise that we are, and we'll go straight back into our shell the minute things don't go right. That's what we are. We're a tortoise.
And they've got players, you know, physical players like Troy Deeney, like Decore, who can make it a very difficult afternoon for us if they want to.
Yeah.
Who will relish that challenge.
Exactly. And, you know, the thing about it is, if you're a tortoise and you go into your shell, it doesn't mean that they can't, like, stick a knife in the open bits of your shell and poke you with it. You see?
That's true. A tortoise is never really safe.
No.
I mean, if you go in the shell, you know, they could just push the shell off a cliff.
Exactly. Or they could pour, like, boiling oil in there. paraffin set you on fire. Poor little fucking turtle guy that you are, but it's your own fault, you know. Get out there and be a snapping turtle. That's what we need to be.
Snapping turtles, not hiding turtles.
Yeah, exactly. Those are vicious fuckers. Those snapping turtles. We need to be one of those. We need snapping to be more like a snapping turtle.
I hope Unai Emery is, I hope that's his team talk. In one dressing room, it's lads, it's Arsenal. In the other dressing room, he's just holding a snapping turtle and saying, I hope you're all looking at this, boys, because this is what I need from you.
I mean, I don't really see any flaw in that. You might as well give that a fucking try.
Yeah.
As much as anything else.
Just before the game, you know, sometimes, like Barcelona famously, before the Champions League final, showed a sort of a special sort of hype montage that they had edited together, which kind of built up the team and showed all their skills, a kind of YouTube compilation. We could, like, clip bits of Planet Earth and stuff, just all the sort of David Attenborough talking about snapping turtles, and just stick that on a projector.
Yeah.
And say, now get out there and show them what you're made of. Leave your shells in the dressing room.
It's just, it's too much. I mean, I should point out at this stage that I would estimate 96% of the questions that we've received are about our away form.
Sure.
And
why is it so shit?
Why is it so bad? Why are we so bad on the road? So there's going to be little variety to this part of the podcast.
But we do have sympathy with that because, you know, it's what we're all banging our heads against the wall wondering.
Yeah.
There are some other questions, though, that we can do.
There are. Okay, I've got one here. This is from John, who's at JJ2160. And he says, how badly do we have to play for Denis Suarez to get a game?
Pretty badly. I mean, we had this question from 1.76 Acres, who said, is Denis Suarez funny, a good chef, a killer bridge player? Just trying to figure out why there was such a strong need to get him here in January. And they ask, would we have been better off giving his minutes to a guy like Saka, if only for the experience? I mean, what minutes, to be honest?
Yeah, what minutes? What minutes?
I will say, actually, I received a message on Twitter.
A telegram.
A guy who went on a tour of the Emirates Stadium this morning.
Okay.
And he managed to, while he was there, he was in Unai Emery's office, and there was a board with the team for the Newcastle game written on it. But it wasn't just the starting 11. Sort of next behind each player, he sort of had the backup. So, you know, based on his substitutes and all the different variables that he could have deployed. And I can tell you now that obviously we started that game with Ozil and Iwobi behind Lacazette. And Iwobi had Mkhitaryan written underneath it. So it's clear they sort of considered like for like. And Lacazette had Aubameyang and Nketiah written beneath. And it was Mesut Ozil who had Denis Suarez written underneath on the right-hand side. So that was Denis Suarez's role in the matchday squad, putatively, is that he was the backup for Mesut Ozil. But I suppose what that does tell you is that perhaps when Denis Suarez was signed, Unai Emery did not anticipate Mesut Ozil becoming a regular part of the first team. And I think that, as much as, you know, Iwobi's form and Mkhitaryan's return from injury, is what has really inhibited his opportunities to actually play any football for us.
Right. He does feel very pointless at this stage, though, doesn't he? I'm not saying that, he is incapable of producing something for us at some point because, you know, we've seen some nice moments from him at Barcelona. But you look at him and on a day like today, and I was thinking about this during the game, I was going, we've got two substitutes left. Or one substitute left, rather. And it's either Iwobi or Denis Suarez. And we're losing away from home and we're playing poorly. Who do you bring on? And not for a second did I think Denis Suarez was the guy to bring on. He feels you know, he's the kind of guy you could bring on after 60 minutes in a game at home against a team who are relegated, who are playing with 10 men and who've all got food poisoning, and you're 3-0 up and you bring him on after an hour. And he'd probably have a very nice time.
Well, it's telling, isn't it? I think the most eye-catching substitute cameo I can remember from him, I think, was probably in the Man United game that we won in the league. Was it?
Yeah.
League? Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other player who came on at that point, around that point in the game, was Eddie Nketiah, which shows, I guess, kind of how comfortable we were at that time and how relaxed Emery presumably felt to be making those kinds of changes.
Nketiah didn't come on until about the 85th minute or something like that. So he was a bit later. But yeah, I mean, he's there. He's a person. He exists. He's real. We're paying him money.
I mean, the thing is, he's kind of, the Elneny of the playmakers. You know, Elneny's been that sort of peripheral figure in the squad, but then there've been a spate of injuries and suspensions. Suddenly he's in the team, and you know, you can't legislate for that. It's not unthinkable that Mkhitaryan, Ozil, Iwobi could go down with injury or illness or whatever, and then suddenly Denis Suarez has got his chance. But if everyone's fit and firing, I don't really see how he gets a look in at all.
Yeah. I think he's like, he's a safety net. I think I've said this before. He is he's a safety net player. Okay.
I've got a question from Discord.
Go on.
It's from Mark 2510. And Mark says, would you say it's fair to say we need to judge players for next season depending on this year's away form? We will never win a title with this current mentality, and the quickest and best way to change that is to replace brittle personalities. There's no point judging players in their comfort zone, because it's easy to play nice football when you have 60,000 people on your side cheering you on. I mean, I don't know if I would find it easy, but he says, what are your thoughts? Do you think when we're looking at how we should rebuild in the summer, it's the away form we should be looking at most closely?
100,000 million billion trillion gazillion machillion dillion percent. Yes.
I thought you might say that. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Because the only way to address this away form issue is to bring in players who have got the mentality to deal with those situations. And we've got too many players who can't and don't and won't. And it's not a case of like sitting them down or, you know, I've seen people, are asking questions about, you know, do we need to bring in a psychologist or do we need to bring in a hypnotist? And I guess there's a certain element of like tongue in cheek to those questions, but probably not really. Like maybe if they thought a psychologist or a hypnotist might do some good, it would be beneficial to us. But no, you as long as these guys remain in the team, guys who don't have the right characteristics to fight and to perform away from home, out of their comfort zone, then it's just going to be the same old thing over and over again. So, yeah, let's judge the players who've done it away from home. I mean, would you disagree? I mean, I'm not saying that, like, you can just immediately get rid of everybody because away from home, you know, collectively we're bad. So it's very difficult to say, well, it's this guy or that guy. It's sort of like a stew of shite, you know, when we travel on the road. But I think if you were to replace two or three players in key positions who had more character, who had more personality, who didn't accept being rolled over week in, week out, when they go away from home, then results would be better. And I think you might get other players who come on that journey with them a little bit, you know? Mm.
Well, is it not possible that if you just added a couple of players who weren't quite as susceptible to what we'll term travel sickness, that the others might respond to it?
Yeah,
you know,
it is, yeah.
Without wanting to go down the sort of Arsenal need a leader, you know, argument too much, if you could add two or three players like that, could that galvanise everybody else? I mean, is there anyone in the squad that you look at and think they do seem capable of replicating their level of performance, whatever the circumstance, whatever the stadium? Hard to think today, certainly, after what went on.
It is hard to think today. I just think that today maybe we exacerbated that with, you know, a central midfield that had no control whatsoever. And we weren't able to dictate the game or control the game in any significant way until Ramsey came on. And Ramsey did his thing for 10 or 15 minutes. And then Everton realised, hang on a minute, it's only Aaron Ramsey. He's the only one doing it. So if we can get around Ramsey quickly and get the ball off him, then all of a sudden we stop Arsenal. And that's kind of what happened. They got back into the game and created all those chances. So I've forgotten exactly what your question was.
Just, is there anyone who we sort of think, look, we can count on them away from home as well as at home? I mean, yeah, maybe Socrates.
Socrates, I would say Ramsey. Monreal normally.
Not be here.
Ramsey or Monreal normally, but I think today was a day when we saw Monreal's legs getting a little bit heavy. I don't think he had the legs to cope with what happened today, and that's a little bit of a worry. Who else? I mean, Guendouzi, we don't know because he's still too young and too raw. You know, I think today was another example of why it's reasonable to be cautious with Guendouzi and the expectations that people have for him.
You know, yeah, and I think historically it's not a new thing, is it, that young players might find it easier to play in a home environment than away. I mean, I seem to think that's always been the case. And, you know, Arsene Wenger was often reticent to throw younger players in. And I think Guendouzi and Maitland-Niles both struggled at Goodison Park.
What do you think? What do you think of Ozil's performance today? You know, I'm not going to sit here.
Don't set me up here. What are you trying to do to me?
I'm not. I'm just genuinely curious because, you know, I don't want to point the finger of blame at him because, as I said, it was a collective malaise today. But we've seen throughout the season that Unai Emery has been reluctant to pick him away from home in the Premier League. Today, he picked him away from home in the Premier League and made him captain. And whatever you want to think of the role of captain, there is a certain measure of responsibility and leadership that comes with that. And I don't mean to say that Arsenal's performance with Ozil as captain was reflective of Ozil's character or whatever. But, you know, it was another day away from home against reasonable opposition, not brilliant opposition, not a top six side. Everton are, you know, a decent enough side where it passed him by. And maybe is today the sort of game where you think, okay, well, the team hasn't played particularly well, but we've got a wonderfully talented playmaker, creative, visionary, genius, mercurial talent who, if the team isn't doing so well, you know, he could be the guy who could step up and do the job for us. But, it, you know, is Ozil not the personification of that player that we're talking about away from home? That weakness away from home, and, you know, Ozil fans will go crazy at me, maybe, but it has been an issue with him throughout his Arsenal career, not just under Unai Emery. You know, Arsene Wenger quite often didn't take him on some of the more difficult away trips when we had to go, you know, north of the wall and play the Wildlings. You know, Mesut Ozil was, you know, sitting at home on the Iron Throne.
Yes, quite a few Game of Thrones analogies.
References,
there,
yeah.
You know, in this, it's coming back. So
we need more dragons.
We're not sponsored.
We need more dragons.
We need a snap. Well, that's a big snapping turtle or dragon.
Yeah.
What did I think? I don't know if I would have started Mesut Ozil today. I mean, he didn't start at Spurs, and that was our best away performance for some time. I think if Aaron Ramsey had been fit to start, I actually think there's every chance he would have started in the advanced role like he did against Tottenham, linking up with Lacazette and breaking beyond him, possibly with Mkhitaryan. And so I think that was probably a factor. He wasn't great, no. And I think there is something to be said about him being captain of this team on this day and that being somehow emblematic. The thing about Ozil is, you know, often people say, well, Arsenal don't really play well unless Mesut Ozil plays well. And sometimes that is true. But equally, I don't necessarily feel that he's a player who has good games when the team don't have good games. It almost feels like his talent requires the platform behind it to really function. He's not an individualist like Alexis Sanchez who, you know, can just sort of get by on his own. And actually, you know, throughout our difficult away spells in the past 2 or 3 years, I seem to remember there was a time where Alexis Sanchez scored about 70% of our goals away from home. And I never really considered that coincidence because he was sort of someone who didn't require that tactical infrastructure to flourish. He could just sort of do his thing independently. I don't think Mesut Ozil is that guy. And that's not to make him a scapegoat for the fact that everything behind him went to shit, but he isn't the guy who can sort of bail you out in these scenarios.
No.
And, you know, I mean, we come back to that thing of at that level of investment, I do feel that the percentage of games in which he can be a big contributor is far smaller than it ought to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
And he will make a massive impact in those games and we'll get maximum points. And he's a big part, I suppose, of why our home form has been quite as good as it has over the past couple of years. But that is half the season. Yeah. This is half the season.
Yeah. Okay. Here is a question from Discord, from the Discord chat server, and it comes from AlW75, who says, is the priority for the summer actually to find some players who have a consistent level of performance rather than an improvement in talent level?
Maybe, yeah. I'm just trying to think. I mean, ideally both, right? I mean, it seems like a sort of silly thing to say. But I do think consistency would be good. I suppose if we had someone who was, you know, fractionally worse in home games but would produce the same performance away, that probably would be better for the team. I know it doesn't quite work like that.
Isn't consistency part of talent, though?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Consistency is quality, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's probably something that we don't recognise enough. You know, we talk about moments that players produce and we say, wow, well, they were outstanding in this one particular game. But someone who is 7 or 8 out of 10 every single week, you know, I think that's what really successful sides are built upon.
Yeah.
And that's what we would love to have. And I think genuinely that is what's incredibly difficult to find in the market, especially for a team like us who aren't, you know, the top team in England.
Yeah. You know, the two go hand in hand for me, to be honest. You know, consistency of performance and level of performance is what makes really good players. There's a lot of good footballers out there, but what makes them not great players or star players is their inability to do it on a consistent basis. You know, somebody who can produce week in, week out, or, you know, everyone will have fluctuations of form, but you know that they can give you something most of the time rather than give you something occasionally. And we've got players who can give us stuff 50% of the time at the moment due to our away form.
That's why if you said to me, sort of hypothetically, I can give you a Nacho Monreal who's 4 years younger, or you can have Sead Kolasinac, I would take Monreal every time, even though Kolasinac can have those games where he's absolutely outstanding and this huge attacking threat. Monreal probably very rarely hits quite those heights, but he at his best, at his peak, was giving you 7 or 8 out of 10 every single week. And it strikes me that defences particularly are reliant and dependent on consistency of personnel and performance. And in terms of performance, we've just really, really lacked that. We've really lacked it in the last few years, to be honest.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would love players who are more consistent. It's a tricky thing to scout for. You've got to do your homework. You've got to watch pretty much an entire season of a player and then make your assessment. But that's their job.
Yeah, okay. I mean, yeah, speaking of that kind of thing, but not necessarily thinking of anyone in particular, let me just see if I can find this question here. It was also on the Discord. It's from Corby, who says, if you could have prevented three signings in the past, which would you choose?
Prevented three signings. I guess let's say from the...
benefit of hindsight.
With relation to today's, to the team?
No, any three signings in Arsenal history. If you could have prevented them, what would you
I think be? I probably would prevent Mustafi. I think pretty much any centre-back that we bought for that kind of money probably would have fared better.
Yeah.
In the intervening period. Other bad signings we made. I mean, if you want to go back further, someone like Chris Kiwamia was a pretty disastrous signing, wasn't it? Mm. In terms of what we paid for him for Ipswich, it was a lot of money at the time. But I guess we had other players in that position, so it wasn't a huge deal.
I mean, I would definitely take Mustafi out. You know, that's £35 million. And I think we could have done just as well with, you know, a kid from the reserves or from the youth team stepping up, or, you know, a £10 million defender, whoever that might have been at the time. I can't remember who else we were chasing that summer. Can you remember? Were there any other defenders in the... there was the guy from Roma, wasn't there? Manolas? Were we not after him that summer?
Yeah, that was definitely talked about. Mm. I think that was probably the one that was talked about.
Silvestre, for me, would be another one. I know we only paid £700,000 for him, but even now, as I picture him in an Arsenal shirt, I want to vomit all over my table.
Absolutely fair enough. I'm just trying to think back further than that.
There's probably loads.
I'm trying to think of instances where there were players impact, kind of sliding doors moments where we signed that guy, so we didn't sign that guy. You know, it's not a good example, but because obviously I wouldn't undo this transfer, but obviously like the signing of Mesut Ozil prevented the re-signing of Cesc Fabregas. So there are other ones sort of that ilk where we missed out on somebody or made the wrong choice. I mean, you know, we bought Richard Wright instead of Jerzy Dudek, and that was an absolute disaster. Although Dudek, you know, had his moments as well.
Yeah. I mean, Gervinho, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how realistic it ever was, but that was kind of a period in time where people were comparing Gervinho and Hazard, isn't it? Because they were both starring for that Lille side that won the league in France, and... you know, we ended up with Gervinho, and I remember people making sort of big arguments on blogs about why we'd got the better end of it by getting Gervinho, his, you know, how his stats were superior and things like that.
Yeah.
It certainly didn't prove to be the case. I'm not sure how realistically we could have got Hazard, you know, at that time either, but... Gervinho is a decent shout. Yeah, I mean, he did not work out, and we persisted with it for quite a while.
Joel Campbell... I know he was a kind of popular guy, but like, he just kind of, he wasn't the worst player we've ever had by any stretch of the imagination, but just, you know, chasing around, trying to get his signature done with the, you know, the seven agents that he purportedly had at the time. And we spent so much of our summer trying to get that deal done. And then we just loaned him out for 4 years. You know, it seemed like an awful lot of it. Go on.
Gallas.
Oh, yeah, Jesus, how I feel so ashamed. I apologise.
Sorry, you've probably all been screaming it at home.
Sorry. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I would have prevented that happening. I mean, at the time, you know, the whole Cole thing had become so... it become so nasty, you know, that whole situation, because Chelsea were flashing their new money around and Cole's behaviour was not particularly great, you know, going off to meet Mourinho. And as we know, Mourinho is history's greatest monster. Chelsea acted badly. Cole acted badly. People will say, in hindsight, Arsenal acted badly. You know, over £5,000 a week to lose someone like Ashley Cole was not great. But certainly, we should never have had that guy fucking playing for us, or worst still, that's got to be one of Arsene Wenger's worst ever decisions. And when you think of some of the decisions he made down the years, making William Gallas captain has got to be the worst.
Right at the top.
The worst. Think of a worse one. I mean, Park Chu-young, what, we paid £2.5 million for him. Yeah. At least we got that rap battle video with those two guys in South Korea who, you know, wanted to kick your head in or whatever.
Burn my face, yeah.
Burn your face off.
Yeah, sort of no harm, no foul there. But Gallas, I think making Gallas captain was an absolute disaster. And I think really hurt the squad. I think it sort of almost fractured the squad. I also think
it did, because like most of them thought he was an absolute cock.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know that for a fact. For a fact.
I mean, on paper, when the transfer went through, it was a decent enough deal. Gallas had been really good for Chelsea until he started threatening to score own goals for them and things like that. And we were at least weakening a rival, you know, who was taking one of our best players. But he was a disaster as a signing. Really, really.
And then he went to play for fucking Spurs, the cunt.
Yeah. God, I would love to undo that.
Yeah, I think absolutely. That's the king of all signings to undo. Have you got any more?
I don't know. Shall I have a look?
Yeah,
I did have one, actually, about... Guendouzi. It wasn't so much about today. It was on the Discord. Let me see if I can find it. Where is it gone?
Somewhere there. It's somewhere there.
Oh, here it is. Brian Regan.
Right.
He says, what do you and James envisage the final product that Matteo Guendouzi is going to become? Is he a defensive midfielder? A box-to-box midfielder? I just don't know.
I also just don't quite know. I think he's physically capable of playing that box-to-box midfield role. I'm not sure he's purely defensive, because I think he's shown this season that some of his, the range of his passing is useful in the opposition third or in the final third or in the opposition half. I'm tired now and I'm trying to make words come out of my mouth. But, you know, he does have a range of passing that's not necessarily the remit of a purely defensive midfielder who's going to break up play, win the ball and give it to someone else who can do something with it. You know, physically, you know, he's got a lot of stamina. He can run. So box-to-box seems about right. You know, I don't quite know. I mean, Emery loves him. That's clear. Unai Emery loves this guy. But I don't quite know yet where he's going to end up. And I don't think he's ready to play consistently without senior players, senior partners with him. You know?
Interesting. Interesting. I think I don't get the feeling he's going to end up quite as a sort of defensive midfield player. I don't think he's ever going to be Granit Xhaka. I don't think he's going to be someone who sits in front of the back four, like a kind of Pirlo player. I think that energy, that capacity he has to get up and down the pitch is going to be more part of how he plays. And actually, sometimes I think when I look at his physical profile, I'm like, is he the closest thing we have to an Aaron Ramsey replacement? You know, someone who really can get all over the pitch. Mm. But what he doesn't have, that Ramsey does have, is goal-scoring capacity.
And handsomeness.
And handsomeness, of course. Yeah. But he never looks like someone who's going to get into the box, you know, and go beyond the striker.
No, I don't think that's part of his game.
So at the moment, it's very difficult to define. I think he's going to be a central midfielder. I don't think in the long run he'll be the deepest midfielder, but he's also not going to be a goal-scoring midfielder.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, maybe he won't even be an Arsenal player in a couple of seasons' time. Who knows? He could very well be a mainstay in our team. He could also be somewhere else, either because he's so good that someone else has taken him, or because, you know, he hasn't quite lived up to his potential. It's just so hard to say about a player that you've only seen for a year who's still only 19 years of age. So it's difficult. I've got a couple to finish with.
Go on then.
First one from Matthew Cooper, who's at Cooper M, where the O's in Cooper are zeros. And he says, are we going to lose all our away games? And if we are, do we basically have to finish the Napoli tie at the Emirates?
Weirdly, I sort of don't worry quite as much about the European games away, which I know is silly because I remember Barté.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just a gut feeling. yes, I think the home leg is going to be massively important. I don't think we'll lose all our away games. that's what it's come to. I don't think we'll lose all our away games. I'd go as far as say we'll probably win some. The issue is going to be, you know, how many of them and what other teams do. I do think the home leg against Napoli is important just because we are so good at home. I can actually see us producing a brilliant performance and going there with a lead. But nothing we do is going to make me confident going into the second leg. That's for sure.
Right. Even if we win 5?
10-0.
10-0?
Yeah.
Okay.
5-0, no, maybe. 5-0, okay. I'll be confident.
I think we need a big game. I think we need a big game on Thursday for sure. You know, I do wonder if the away thing is simply away or, you know, if the players feel a little bit uncomfortable and intimidated by going to Goodison Park, which today was quiet at times, eerily quiet. There were periods in the second half where it was just so quiet. It was really strange. You know, if they're getting intimidated by that, what the fuck are they going to be like in Napoli? Where basically everyone who isn't an Arsenal fan in that stadium wants to kill them, like, you know, just kill them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yes, I'm not feeling great about that.
Okay.
A day at a time.
One day at a time. Okay, we might feel good come Thursday. Final question, and this is a really good one. It comes from Darren, who's at DazClark89. And he says, would you rather go to jail for a year or go to jail with a Rubik's Cube and you can leave when you're done?
I don't know if I've ever had to do a Rubik's Cube before. Can you do them?
No. I'd go to jail for a year because I'd spend the rest of my life in jail if I had to do a Rubik's Cube in order to leave.
Yeah. I think you just take the year and you get on with it. I mean, yeah, because what if you can't do it? Yeah. What if you just get stuck and you're like, nope, I can't figure it out?
No. You know the way there are those people, they show the videos sometimes and they like get a Rubik's Cube and they scrunchle it all up as, you know, as scrunchily as it can go.
Sure.
And they hand it to some guy and he goes, and in 14.3 seconds, he's got it done. He's done. Yeah. It's all perfect. There are people like that.
Mm.
And then there are people like me who as good as they are at doing it, I'm as bad.
Mm.
I could be there for 50 years and I'd never do it. It'd be like the fucking Shawshank Redemption. Yeah. It'd be like, old Bloggs there. He's been here for 50 years with his Rubik's Cube in the corner. You know, I'd spend the rest of my life in jail.
Sure.
So I'd take the year and whatever came with it, at least I knew I'd get out. But the idea of sitting there on my, you know, on my like jail bed with my fucking bucket to have a poo in or whatever, and trying to do a Rubik's Cube, no, it would just be so frustrating. And at some point, although you could peel off the stickers, couldn't you? And just, do they do that anymore? Do they have stickers on them? They used to. They used to have stickers.
Really?
Yeah. The cubes, they used to have stickers and you could just peel the stickers off. But they'd figure that out.
That seems too easy. I think they're solid now.
Yeah.
I think they're just that
kind. I wouldn't be able to do it. A year in jail for me.
But a year, like you could spend every waking hour getting better at doing Rubik's Cubes.
I wouldn't get better. I wouldn't get better. Like, I'm not, you know, it's just not, I don't get it. I don't understand it. It makes my head hurt. You know the way fundamentally you can understand some things? Like if you, like when I cook, for example, I don't really follow recipes. I just kind of know how stuff works.
Sure.
Right? You just got natural aptitude for whatever that is. You know, do you ever see someone who can't kick a football?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not talking about you.
Sure, sure.
But, you know,
you just can't kick it at all.
Just can't kick it. Like they've got no coordination. They just do not know or cannot make their legs kick a football properly. That's me with a Rubik's Cube.
Right.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, you're supposed to not kick it. That's the first piece of advice I give you.
Thanks. But that's my level of technique with that.
I also would choose a year because the fear... When I can't do something, I lose patience with it very swiftly.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm not good at applying myself.
Stupid. This is fucking stupid. No need for any of this.
I would break the Rubik's Cube. I would throw the Rubik's Cube against the wall and smash it.
Yeah.
And then I'd be like, oh, now I'll die here.
Yeah. Can I have another Rubik's Cube? No, that wasn't part of our deal.
Exactly.
And here's Big Tex from the next cell to welcome you in. Definitely a year. Okay, well, that's good. I'm sure there are other people out there who would say, oh, that'd be easy. You just do it. Eventually you do it. Surely, is it like the monkey's typewriter thing? You know, monkeys and typewriters and works of Shakespeare, that if you just sat there for long enough going, eventually you get it.
Maybe.
I don't know. I don't think so.
They say that, but I still haven't seen a monkey write anything good. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Maybe it's cruel.
I would just be one of those monkeys just hammering away at that Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
Not coming to anything.
Yeah, there was a raid here in Dublin during the week.
Right.
And they got a load of guns. The police went in and they found this house with a load of guns, load of cash, load of drugs, and a monkey.
And the monkey, what, he had organized all these guns
I don't
and drugs
know if
stuff?
The monkey was the leader of the gang or not, no. But it was definitely a monkey.
It just seems suspicious that he would be there. Do you know what I mean? Unless he's being framed and the gangsters were like...
It wasn't us.
We could see the cops coming. Quick, get the monkey. Put the monkey near all the incriminating evidence.
So here's what they found. 2 machine guns, 5 loaded magazines for the machine guns, a magnum, 200 rounds of ammunition, 200 shotgun cartridges, 1 kilogram of cocaine with an estimated street value of 100,000 euros, 29,500 pounds worth of cannabis herb. I believe the kids on the street call that weed, hydraulic presser for the cocaine, and a monkey. And there was also 6 dogs and a horse. I mean, these people weren't lying low.
They work for the monkey, I guess.
Yeah.
They're like his henchmen.
The monkey monkey going into the meetings, you know, with 3 dogs either side.
Exactly. Right, riding a horse.
Yeah, exactly. Ah, brilliant. At last, we found something to laugh about on this awful day of football.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, well, I think we should leave it there. We are going to have another Arsecast Extra on Friday because we play late on Thursday night. Yeah, against Napoli.
It's not 6 p.m. silly
no,
one, is
it's
it?
No, it's 8 p.m. I think it's an 8 p.m. anyway.
It is an 8 p.m.
Yeah, okay.
The Emirates Stadium.
So if you want to hear a bit more about Napoli, you can listen back to last Friday's Arsecast. Paolo Bandini, who knows all there is to know about Serie A, was on, and he tells us a bit about Napoli, what to expect from them, where their strengths are, who could be the danger men. But of course, we're at home, so we don't need to worry about any of their danger men until the second leg. But because the game is on late, we'll have an Arsecast Extra on Friday. Join us for that. And for now, I'm going to go drink a beer.
Enjoy it. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.